But this should be a conversation you have months before euthanasia is there. And anytime I've got a pet that's got 6 months or less to live, I'm going to have a quality of life talk with them.
Welcome to the So You're a Vet Now What, the podcast. This is a show that serves as your audio mentor in your journey as a veterinarian. And each week, our awesome host, Dr. Mariah McCauley, will be bringing you insightful short-form interviews with happy, successful vets who are eager to share their career and clinical tips to make your life easier. So whether you're a final year vet student or a recent graduate, this podcast is your trusted companion on the pathway to success in veterinary medicine. Over to you, Mo.
Welcome back to So You're a Vet, Now What? I am your host, Dr. Mariah McCauley. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Lap of Love co-founder, Dr. Mary Gardner. It can be said that having conversations around quality of life and helping pets have a peaceful passing are some of Mary's passion projects, as she has devoted her career to this very thing. As new grad vets, the idea of talking about quality of life with clients can be very daunting and even scary at times. In today's episode, Mary and I talk about why these conversations can be so difficult, but also how they can become so fulfilling. You'll hear us focus heavily on the emotional aspects surrounding the conversation and how to use clinical empathy in these situations. But before we jump into today's episode, I want to invite you guys to leave us a comment if you are listening on Spotify or Apple Music. I'd love to hear what you found valuable in today's episode or what topic you'd like to hear next. All right, let's jump into today's episode. All right, well, Mary, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I have so been looking forward to this, and I've actually been having a number of graduates that have been even many years experience asking about this specific topic. Kind of jumping right into it, like what we were looking at today is that topic of how do we talk about quality of life with our clients? As a new grad, like, honestly, like I remember my own experience, like you come out of vet school and you're taught how to keep things alive. Like that is what you spend 4 years intensely focusing on. And then suddenly you're asked to unalive something, to use a TikTok phrase. You're asked to perform a humane euthanasia and you are asked to have a conversation with the clients about how do you decide if it's time. And honestly, as a new grad, that is a lot to handle because you really haven't been prepared with how to have that conversation. How do you show that empathy? How do you actually even do the euthanasia is a whole other subject. But I am so looking forward to talking to you about this because of your years of experience and your work with Lap of Love. Like this is what you do. This is where your heart is, your passion project is. So I guess like, let's look at it from the respect of like, maybe I'm your new grad that you're mentoring about this. And I've come to you and I'm like, Dr. Gardner, I don't know what to do. These clients, they came to me for a quality of life assessment. I don't really know what to talk to them about. I don't know how to talk to them, like help, SOS.
Yeah. It's a very common question that I'll get. It's probably my most attended lecture when I speak at conferences. How to assess quality of life is always packed full. And I think schools are getting better at having an end-of-life course. We speak at the University of Florida, Colorado's got it. Many are now understand that's a big part of the curriculum that is needed. But I think all grads need to realize that even if you're taught it, don't mean you're going to remember it. Don't mean you're going to be good at it. You know, sometimes you're like, we were never taught that. And I'm like, I can remember maybe 20% of what I was taught at vet school, and I could swear that they did teach us that. And then I could probably find my notes like, ooh, yeah, they did actually. You're not going to remember everything, and it will be solidified the more and more that you do things and the way that you, especially something like this, I think you add your own flavor to the conversation, just like walking into a regular exam room, right? Some people are going to be a bit more pragmatic and some are going to be chatty. And so this is one of those conversation pieces. It's not just about medicine. And I do think newer veterinarians have a hard time because they are still in that save mode. And, you know, when somebody says, I think it's time, well, we can still run this one more test. And you have to remember that, yes, but also we could euthanize, or also we could do palliative care, and also we could stop. And I think it's hard for us to change that. It took me a while too. And you don't want to disappoint. You don't want to euthanize something that maybe you could have. And do they want me to tell them that? Maybe they didn't know. Maybe they weren't taught that, whatever. So I get why it's such a a struggle. But don't worry, there's a lot of older vets in my conference rooms. So like, I think it's a topic that many weren't trained on. And unless you do this as often as I do it, it's going to be, you know, more difficult. You'll do a type of surgery, what, twice a year. And, you know, you're always going to be like, uh-oh. But this is something that on average, most full-time doctors will do one euthanasia a week. So now that's the euthanasia. Now, are you having a quality of life discussion or not? You know, if they bring in a pickled diabetic cat that, you know, it's definitely time, then you're not having that conversation. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other podcast about how to talk about euthanasia and stuff like that. Yeah. Specifically, you've got those families and it's the diabetic cat that, you know, it's not doing well. And how do I know it's time? And this is a conversation you should be having way before it's too late. When you're having this conversation because you want them to say it's time to say goodbye, like that's an obvious one. And sometimes people are just on denial island. And so you do have to help get them off denial island. But this should be a conversation you have months before euthanasia is there. And anytime I've got a pet that's got 6 months or less to live, I'm going to have a quality of life talk with them. So my niece, her Rottweiler, had osteosarcoma back in November. And like instantly I started talking to her about quality of life and bucket lists and stuff like that. And my sister was like, don't scare her. And I'm like, I got to prepare her. And we say goodbye to Tonka about 3.5 weeks later. And I'm like, we don't have sometimes 6 months in some of these diseases, right? So she was much better prepared and was able to do like bucket list items and things like that and assess when it was time. And she felt, sad as it was, way better supported and making the right decision. Because it will always seem too soon until it's too late. And getting ahead of this, I think also helps me as a doctor know that I'm not euthanizing, you know, something where the families are unsure and then I question myself at night and can't pillow my head at night.
Yeah.
Now, would you like for me to tell you how I start these conversations?
Yeah. Honestly, like, I think it'd be good because like, say, like, we'll give a case example then. Something I actually had recently that is a great one is a cat that came in from a different clinic. It had been diagnosed with a hepatic mass, had bicavity effusions. And the owner is like, I am not ready to euthanize. I want to do abdominocentesis. I want to get this fluid off. The cat needs sedation really to get it properly done. And she's like, not ready to euthanize. She had to euthanize her dog a year ago on her birthday, which was April 30th. So she's like, I cannot euthanize this cat. Like, what do we need to do?
Okay. So
yeah.
See, now I'm going to challenge you. I think that's an easy one. It's an easy one because we and all those are listening are like, oof, we got effusion. She's not going to be breathing well. That's actually us trying to help her say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that was easy. I'll hit that for sure. But what about an old 14-year-old Jack Russell that's got cognitive dysfunction?
Ooh, that's a really good one.
Right? That's harder because to me, mental illness is still an illness and that is an illness, but it's one that, are they suffering or not? Right? So are they panting and pacing at night? Well, that's anxiety. That's a form of suffering. But who's suffering? The family's suffering. They're not sleeping. Maybe he's just standing in a corner. And just like head, you know, just mm-hmm. his head is in a corner for half the day, right? So those are harder. What about a lab, a happy, joyful lab that's got arthritis and he's eating still and he's happy still and his tail is working?
Yep, had that one literally.
Those are tough ones.
Had that one a week ago.
Yeah, those are way harder, but so more satisfying to help those families.
Yeah.
The ones that are, this is what I started saying, the ones that are so bad and what we would consider on denial island and we got to help them up, those are kind of easier. We know the pet is suffering or will suffer very shortly soon. And so we got to help the family know that it's coming in the next few days. But I want to prepare them way before that. So as soon as that, you know, liver cancer came up, like I'm going to have the conversation. So when you've got a bad juju kind of like disease going on, start having this. Have a video that you've made. I've made a video. It's on my YouTube channel that it's like 45 minutes about quality. Like, you know, do your own or send that link because it'll be really helpful. And, all right, so back to the question. Now, this goes for all those examples
yes.
I had, right? Cognitive dysfunction, happy arthritic dog, a potato chip kitty cat, and your liver mass one. So there are a few things I'm going to think about how I have my conversation. The first is, what is the ailment that the pet has? And in all of those, because the way they die are going to be different, right? How is the cognitive dysfunction dog going to die? On his own, he's not, right? how is that Labrador that's just got some really bad hips and can barely get up, how are they going to die? Because they're still eating. They're not. Like, the way they will is so far, and they're going to get something else. We don't know about it, or maybe bed sores that get infected, but they're not, right? How is the kidney failure cat going to die? So she will, but there's going to be some reactions that are going to be very challenging for the family to see. And to have a cat get emaciated and not eating and throwing up and stuff, we don't want that. But the ones where Mother Nature is not going to do it, we got to have these conversations. So the disease, the ailment, and sometimes I don't have a disease. When we see these pets, sometimes we don't know what.
Yeah.
I don't know why your dog's not walking. It could be a disc issue. It could be arthritis. It could be a
tumor.
Whatever else. Yeah. A tumor. Right. A neuropathy. Like, who knows? But they're not walking. And so, and the family's not ready to do, they're not going to do diagnostics or anything like that. Right. So what is the ailment that they're having? So if I've got a cat with the, you know, effusion, they're not going to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. If it's a LARPAR dog, they're not going to breathe. If it's a collapsing trachea, if it's Metz to the lungs, right? Not breathing is such a different conversation than not walking, cognitive dysfunction, early lymphoma, things like that, right? So I don't like a pet that can't breathe. That's like number one emergent situation. So that's one thing I think about internally. Okay, how am I going to approach this? What are the ailments? Two, the pet's personality. Because every pet manages their ailments a little bit differently. What treatment options I can do are going to be very different. So the dog that's laying behind me, he not only has separation anxiety, so that's a painful thing for me to deal with, but he's not friendly with other animals at all. So for him to go to a rehab center or get chemo and sit in the treatment area, like, I will do everything for my pets, but I can't do everything for him because of his personality. But he'll take medications okay. My one cat who had a kidney failure, Bodhi, he could take a 18-gauge sub-Q fluids all day long. I tried to give him a pill and he's going to scratch my face off. And that's my cat, right? So how they handle stuff may determine what treatment options we can do. Therefore, quality of life may change.
Mm-hmm. Are you a new or recent veterinary graduate? If so, listen up. My course, Sawyer Vet, Now What?, has been put together specifically for you. We focus on the non-clinical skills. Don't tune out. This is not as dull as it sounds, I promise you. In fact, almost every career problem that people face are due to not having well-developed non-clinical skills. The skills that I'm talking about are things like client communication, so you have great relationships with clients, emotional intelligence, so you've got great relationships with your teammates, effective negotiation skills, so you can get paid what you are worth, management of imposter syndrome, and how to build formidable resilience. They're not just skills, they are prerequisites vital for success in financial and emotional well-being. This course serves as an essential stepping stone to your success. So let's take the leap together. I will be your mentor as we go through 12 modules, helping you transition from being a student to being a fully rounded professional. Head to www.drdavenichol.com/syav-class to learn more. Now back to the show.
Right. So these are all the things I'm thinking in my brain. The budgets of the family. So the monetary budget is one thing, of course, but what about the physical budget? Can they physically pick up this pet anymore? Like, and it's not just a big Great Dane. It could be, you know, my 50-pound dog is a lot to manage. My neighbor, she has a little dachshund who had back surgery, but for her to bend over to hold the harness, like, is really hard for her back, right? So what's the physical budgets of the family? What are the time budgets of the family? So, you know, it takes a lot to care for these older pets. Whether they have to be let out every 4 hours, maybe their medications every 6 hours, maybe they've got cognitive dysfunction so they can't be left alone or they're going to tear up the house or pee everywhere. Like all the things, the, you know, trips to the vet clinic, the hand making the food. So on average, a pet with a terminal illness or end stage, like life, you know, old jalopies, 3 extra hours a day they spend caring for their dog. The walk is slower, right? Like all of these things, hand feeding their dog. So that's a lot. The time budget is immense. And then there's the emotional budget. Your example was great. I lost my dog or cat on my birthday last year. I can't have that again. So I want to wait until after the birthday.
Yep.
Or this is the last living link to my child and I, you know, who's passed and I can't let them go. The other way too is sometimes we get animals and we're like, I don't think it's time. He could still do more. And she's like, you know what? I let my last golden retriever go too long with this disease. But usually, and this is so like not documented, it's just what I notice is that the first euthanasia, they usually wait too long.
And then
the second one after that.
Yeah.
And it continues to get, they'll do it sooner.
Yeah. I'm going to dive into this little spot here a lot more because I think hitting on the emotional side of it is where a lot of new grads struggle.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily struggle. It's just they don't have the experience to stand on their own two feet as easily. And so.
Or they don't think about that.
Yeah.
They don't train us to say, this woman lost her dog her birthday last year.
Yeah.
How are we going to get her through that?
Exactly. It's like, how do we show that empathy? So this cat with the bicavity effusions, where the owner is like, I cannot do this right now. Like I physically, like literally she was shaking and crying in the consult room with me. And so as much as in the back of my head, I know that this cat really has limited time. The two main things that I wanted to let her know is like, this is a safe place for you to talk to me about your questions, your concerns. But I want to hear from you, like, what are your goals and what are your expectations in this case? Because I needed to know if she thought this cat was going to live for 4 more months on its medicinal mushrooms that she read off about Facebook, or if she totally understood that tomorrow I could see her back and tomorrow would be the day. Because that dramatically changed how I continued to communicate with her and how I took care of this specific patient. Because I did have the conversation with her. I was like, honestly, I have seen more cases of this than I would ever want you to have to experience in your lifetime. And because of that, like that is part of the reason I'm making the recommendations that I am. But I can't help you unless I know what your goals and your expectations are.
Totally.
And so that's the kind of like, let's talk about like, how do we have that kind of conversation with these clients? Like, how do we show that empathy? Because we can talk a lot about like, oh, there's like these things that you have to think about. But like when it really gets down to it, it's like, how do we care for like, yes, the patient medically, but we're going to focus on how do we care for the client emotionally? So let's dive into that more.
No, that's great. And there is something called caregiver burden, which is so well known in the human caring space. It's actually done a lot of research in the pet caring space. And I don't think we realize that. And so all of the stressors that go along is also on top of this. But goals of care, massive. I talk about it in my book. I've got also workbooks that you can use with families. And goals of care is a whole section because if they need to make it to get to Christmas because whatever, or whatever that may be, or they're realistic, like you said, are these, you know, crystals and mushrooms, and please forgive me if they do work, right? What is that going to provide to you? And also being okay with what the family wants, like suffering for the pet. We never want a pet to suffer. Like we all would agree with that, right? We all would agree with that. But there are times where a pet is like, what is perfection? Like not, even my dog's got separation anxiety. Like some people would say euthanize him, right? Because he's got anxiety. And so like, it's such a subjective thing of what's right and wrong and what's okay quality of life and not. I know some people that say as soon as the dog becomes incontinent, like, and they're pooping on themselves and peeing on themselves, then that's time. And that may not be my opinion, but you know what? To them, that is. Mm-hmm. And the dog does have a problem, but I do think setting expectations. Also, if they want every single last moment of time with their pet, and you have to say this very compassionately and carefully, that's okay. I want to support your decision. So let's talk about where your emergency clinic is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had this with mostly heart failure pet, right? Yep. Discussions. And they're like, no, I don't want to go to the emergency clinic. I want you to do it. I know. But for me to do it, we need to plan. And at Lap of Love, we never charge a cancellation fee. So we'll say we can make the appointment for tomorrow at 9. And if you wake up and it, you know, everything's better, then we can cancel it. But I think telling them that the emergency clinic is the option if they wait too long. But you have to say it in a non-judgmental way. Just say, I want to support your decision. I want every last moment with my pet too. To get that, I want to be prepared. So that way you don't have regrets afterwards that it wasn't a beautiful experience. Because also, just like you want every last moment, you want also the last moment to be beautiful. right? Wouldn't you agree that the last moment is most important? You know, it may be a moment you have to do sooner than you want. And it's such a beautiful way when you see their face, like, okay, they realize it. When I was starting to do in-home end-of-life care, my goal was a beautiful passing. But in the beginning, you're hustling, you're doing everything. I was working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. I'd say, you call me any time of the day, I'll come to your house. Like, that's how we started the company.
Yeah.
And it was 2 a.m. appointments, and all of them are respiratory distress. This is why I've got such a, you know, problem with respiratory distress. Because that's the thing that's going to be emergent. I can't breathe. And I thought, as I'm euthanizing so many of them at 2 a.m., not because I didn't want to be there at 2 a.m. Let me tell you, I didn't want to be there at 2 a.m. But it was not a good experience. The pet was suffering. The family suffering. Everybody's nervous. I'm sweating, right? Like, I'm in my PJs sweating. So I stopped doing any call me anytime, you know, the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't come in the middle of the night. I'm sorry, because my goal is a peaceful euthanasia. And if that happens, I want you to take me to the emergency clinic. And by the way, they may pass along the way. But you can't say it in a very judgy way. And that's where I think a lot of us just, you know, it takes time to learn how to say it. And also it takes time to screw that up. I have.
Yeah.
But I do think that's a really important thing. So the ailment that the pet has, the pet's personality, the family's budgets, the family's quality of life, like the quality of life of the pet is the number one reason why people euthanize. The quality of their life is the second reason. So the pet may be okay, you know, ish, but they're in a fight with their partner. They're going through their own divorce. Like they're like all these things, they're going through their own health issues. So their quality of life could be really bad. And plus on top of this, they can't care for the pet the way the pet should. So at any time I support that decision. And I think what's helpful too is there's a moment where, or a quality of life for the pet that the pet is so good, I'm not going to euthanize. Like I won't. On the other end, there's where the quality of life is so bad, I need to get them off a denial island. And that's where I think a lot of us, you know, fall. Like, oof, we got no problem on that one. In between is a huge valley of subjectiveness, right? So when is time to euthanize that cognitive dysfunction dog, right? Is there an exact moment of time? I don't ever want somebody to say, don't worry, you'll know.
Ugh.
And people in clinics say that. And they don't know. And they hear that. Veterinarians still say, don't worry. I tell you when you will know. You will know on that stage where they're so bad. We all know that. But you've got a cognitive dysfunction dog, like, or that mobility issue, you know, the Labrador. Like, when is time?
Yeah.
You don't know. That's why. Is that lab going to stop eating? No. With arthritis? Not at all. He's going to eat the last day, right? His face is going to be in the food bowl. So you can't also say when he stops eating. Now, there are some diseases that will stop their eating, right? So I don't want to say I don't say that, right? So, or like they'll give you a look. There's no look that they give. The look is a look of suffering.
Which a lot of clients can't identify, quite honestly.
Right. And you're in that space where you hope for the best and you don't want like them to go. So you do sometimes have that denial goggles on, right? So there's the subjective time period. Let me tell you, if somebody calls me on Monday and they said, Mary, we had the crappiest weekend. He was horrible, like blah, 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 all the things. Can you please come today to euthanize? I will say, absolutely. I support your decision. If they also call me on Monday and say, you know what, we had a beautiful weekend. We went to the park. He had all his favorite visitors. He's doing really well. Will you come euthanize him today? I will say, yes, I will. Because that's how they want their last weekend to be. And God bless them. I don't know if I could always do that myself with my own animals, right? So it's okay to go on a good day.
Yeah. And one thing that you said there was, I support your decision, which
I support your decision.
I feel like so many clients need to hear that because they feel like they're going to be judged by the veterinarian if they ask to be euthanized and their dog is doing well, or even if their dog is doing poorly, they 100%. Fear the judgment. And so, granted, don't say it if you don't like fully believe it, but like that is really helpful to your clients.
So helpful. And like, you know, even my dog Norrin, right? He's completely, quote, physically healthy. It's his mental health, it's with his anxiety. And I've learned so much from him that if any family has a dog with separation anxiety, like I support their decision to say goodbye. And he's like, his blood work's great. Everything's great. Like some days I look at him like, can you get something? Because it's such an emotional struggle for me to have, like, it's horrible. But So support your decision. Even, by the way, like I used that once. There was, I see a lot of diabetic cats that I'm like, ooh, you know, maybe we could do, you know, like some, you know, diagnostics. So there's one, every time I have this, but there's one I specifically remember. He like had his insulin change maybe 6 months prior. And then by this time, he's like, you know, he gave me some symptoms that sounded like end stage kind of diabetes stuff. So I'm waiting to see this cat look horrible. And so I go to his bedroom because a lot of times they're on the bed and stuff like that, right? But the whole way through his house, he's got one of those houses that you'll see on Instagram that you're like, wow, I wish I could build those shelves that the cats can go on and, you know, like a hamster trail basically for cats. And I'm like, this guy loves his cat. There's no question about this. And so I see the cat, Domino, and I'm like, ooh, that's not like a pickled cat that I'm ready to euthanize. He looked pretty good. So I said to him, I said, I know, Mark, how difficult it is to manage diabetes. I've had my own cats with diabetes and a dog with diabetes. So I know how difficult it can be. And I support your decision to say goodbye to Domino. But just what you shared with me, his symptoms and how he looks, I think that maybe we should just check his insulin levels beforehand or his sugar levels, because maybe we need to adjust his insulin. But I still support your decision if it's time. Because some of these long disease, like they're done. Mm-hmm. They're checked out, right? And so I want to do that. And in that case, actually, I didn't charge him for my appointment. And I said, use the money to go see what's up. And like years later, he calls me, time for Domino. Like,
oh, wow.
Years. So I think it is a very good thing to say. So the other thing is quality of life assessment scales. There's a ton out there. You could Google it.
Yes. I was just thinking about the Ohio State University one.
The Ohio State one is great. That one's great. Lap of Love, we have a very simple one. I myself, in my books, I created one separate for dogs and cats because I just think the questions are a little bit different. I also have caregiver assessment charts. So that helps, you know, when the caregivers are stressed and it can help us realize that they're done, right? Mm-hmm. So those are super helpful. And I always say after my lectures, I get a lot of people that come up and they'll give me I have this example of this cat with bicavitary effusion. Yeah. Like they'll give me the thing, right? And I say, have you done a quality of life scale with them? And they say no, right? And so I said, that's the first stop is do one with them, because those questions, it starts to get them thinking. I know that some people are like, well, I want to have what's it called when you verify something, you know, a bit more scientific scale. Okay. Like it's been verified or whatever the word is, right? And I'm like, this is such a subjective thing, right? It's just to get questions and thoughts going, right? Like,
and I think that's where people like the Ohio State University one a little bit more, because it does have like a numerical scale. It's a sliding scale, which I always tell people, I'm like, this isn't going to necessarily make your decision. But since we're talking about this early, if you do this on like a week to every other week basis, you might notice a downward trend in their quality of life, and it may help influence your decision.
Totally. Yeah, I created an app a couple of years ago. We're redoing it now, called the Gray Muzzle. And we tracked all of their numbers of their scale so that way you can see that trend. And let me tell you, it helps people when they do make the decision, looking back at that and just seeing that trend. You know, a calendar, just putting a blank month, you know, boxes, 31 boxes on the refrigerator and having X's on them and just looking to say like, uh-oh, like that's not good. Because you will always forget how bad it was when a good day happens.
Yep.
You can have the crappiest 3 days and all of a sudden they finally ate, they're happy to see you and they went for a walk and you're like, woo, everything's fun, right? But you forget those last 3 days were horrible. So you cannot monitor what you don't measure. So putting it on the calendar, you know, writing notes next to it, like, hey, he had to take 4, you know, Valiums today to settle down, whatever. And you can see that trend will be really helpful. But another tip I say is, what is a good day to you? Like, literally, what is a good day? Because everybody says it, I want more good days than bad. Well, that's just half-assed if you want to stop there. Because a good day to one person may be, you know what, I need 8 hours sleep. And I don't want to help him up with the harness and walk around. Where other people, as you know, will sleep in their living room with that dog, wake up every 2 hours to give the medication, whatever it is, to calm them down, will carry them out, put them in a wagon, like all those things. So, and that's a good day. And they're fine, right? So that's also very different within the household itself. And so coming up with what is a good day, and a good moment does not equal the day. So you could have one meal that they ate. It doesn't mean they're eating well for that whole day. These are all conversations to have, a part of it. And maybe I would suggest the new grad have almost a checklist of these things that we talk about, just to say, okay, I went over that, Because now it's not, I got it. Like, I've been doing thousands of these, right? So, like, it's all in my brain. And having my video, people can go watch my video on YouTube, and it's like, it can help them create their little checklist, if you will. And also, I think I normally end it, again, my goal is a peaceful euthanasia. What does that mean to you, family? Like, what would you like to do? And almost demystify, or like, we're so death adverse, we don't want to talk about it. It's not the best word to say, like, okay, let's have fun planning for it. But okay, do you want a party? Where do you want it to be? Who do you want present? What do you want to bake for him? He can have whatever he wants that day. Like, go get McDonald's, whatever, get Dairy Queen. And they get like, oh my gosh, let's do bucket lists beforehand. Like, people love that stuff. So that's why I say, don't wait until they're a dish rag and you want to do a quality life skill to get them off the, you know, denial island. Do this stuff weeks in advance. I promise you, it will help you as a veterinarian sleep better at night. Because we struggle with the euthanasia because we think we could have done more. But sometimes saying goodbye is okay. And I wasn't always good at it in the beginning. It took a lot of years. And, you know, it took a few years doing this that also I became vegan during the process too. Because we struggle so much with saying goodbye to these pets that are like halfway, like, you know, not well. And I'm like, all of our food production, they have to be totally healthy and young, and we've got no problem. But we struggle with a dog that's got a really bad arthritis, but they're still eating. And so I'm like, like, it's changed my mindset on many things. But I hope that was helpful. I just rambled a lot.
No, honestly, I'm here for the rambling.
Okay.
Honestly, I think you closed a very nice bookend for us for this chapter of talking about euthanasia. And the biggest thing is, like, for these final year students, for these new grads, or even for the doctors who have been out like 10 plus years who still struggle with this, what I want to highlight is that you're not alone if you're struggling with, how do I have this conversation? Like, there is no stepwise formula to make it go perfectly every single time. And just like Mary said, like, she's done it poorly in the past. I've done it poorly in the past. You've had years of experience. This is what you pour your heart into. And yet there's still some figuring out that you have to do on a daily basis. And 100%. So that is perfectly okay. But what we hope today has helped you guys with is just opened up some thought process. Maybe you listen to this episode and you're like, you know what? I do want to create my little list of a couple phrases I can use, a couple questions I can use. Go and look up those resources from Lap of Love from The Ohio State University. Find Mary's YouTube video. Like, these are going to be the things, like, I print out that Ohio State University quality of life assessment on a weekly basis. And I give that to my clients because it helps open up the conversation. So if nothing else, this is just one step in the direction to help you guys feel more confident and comfortable. Cause like you said, like, we as practitioners also have to feel okay with what we're doing. And so that is a huge part of the equation. So Mary, thank you so much for coming on the show, chatting about your passion project, sharing your experience. I've learned a lot. Hopefully everyone else has too.
Awesome.
But do you have any final words? I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Any final words of wisdom for these new grads? Maybe like that last thing you would tell them before they walk into the consult room.
I know this may sound weird, but I look at doing a really good conversation about like quality of life, like successfully, as rewarding as, you know, fixing a broken leg. Like, when I walk out of there, like, yes, I said all the right things to help them plan, to help support them, whatever. I feel really good about that. Like, do not think that this is a failure. Every pet will die, but every pet will not die well. But we can change that, and we can change that for the family. That's my final thought.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love it. Mary, thank you again, once again, for coming
You're
on
welcome.
The show. But until next time, y'all, see ya.
Bye.
So that's it for another show. Thank you so much to Dr. Mariah and her guests for today's tips. And if you're interested in learning more about what we do to support early stage vets in their careers, then check out my book, Sorry Vet Now What, or Non-Clinical Skills Training Class of the same name. Until next time, take care.